This is Business Rockstars. I'm Brittany Lehman, and my guest today is Chris Hopper, head of esports North America at Riot Games. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So what were you doing before Riot Games that led you to your career?
I was working for a strategy consulting firm that worked with retail banks in New York. That's how I kind of met League of Legends, in fact. It was my manager who introduced me to the game. And I was actually playing with him and met one of his buddies who ended up interning at Riot. And he's the guy that said, you know, esports is this team that they're building. They don't really know what's going on. They need some problem solvers. You should check it out. And so I ended up applying through him. So, you know, it was sort of this weird, if my manager hadn't introduced me, I probably wouldn't have left the company. But, you know, I guess karmically later, here I am and, you know, glad to be here.
That's amazing. And it's so different from what you were doing.
Very different challenges.
And you've been a part of the senior team at Riot Games and League of Legends has seen tremendous growth. Can you tell us about how esports has grown and specifically how it's grown at Riot?
Sure. So I came to Riot back in 2012. And back then, esports was a very different entity than it was today. Back then, it was a lot of independent tournament organizers. You'd see multi-game events at, you know, MLGs and IPLs and things like that. And Riot really took one of the first steps into developer-driven sort of single-game esports. And, you know, we created the domestic leagues in North America and Europe. Now we've actually spread to 13 regions globally. We have 13 different domestic leagues running. And really, we just tried to be responsive to the players at every step. We tried to see what is it the players want and what is the product that we think would be best for those gamers and those viewers who want to participate in the esport. So, you know, what we wanted to do was create a nice mix of domestic competition that will be aspirational for players in all those regions, but also culminating in incredibly competitive, mastery-driven events like our World Championship. So, you know, it's been an evolution over time, and we've certainly, you know, made some mistakes and learned from them along the way. But I'd say at this point, we feel pretty positively about the product that we've put out there.
That's amazing. And as you were saying, you hold a championship every year, and the viewership is close to matching the Super Bowl. Why are fans so excited by the teams and the game?
You know, this year was certainly a special year. I think the last several years have been dominated by teams from our Korean league. Mm. This year, there was no Korean team even in the semifinals. There was a North American team. There were two European teams. There was a Chinese team. So there was more international representation this year. I think the tournament felt a little bit more up for grabs this year. So more people were kind of excited, didn't feel as foretold of an outcome. But overall, I think it's just that people have a passion for this game. You know, mm-hmm. It's something where the mastery and, you know, the time you invest in it can be rewarded. And watching these pros play and watching the time they've invested in their mastery be rewarded is incredibly compelling. And, you know, for anybody who you know, played football or played basketball as a kid and now watches the NBA and watches the NFL, it doesn't matter that you can't throw a 60-yard touchdown pass. The fact that you can appreciate what goes into somebody who can throw a 60-yard touchdown pass is what makes that sport so special.
Right.
And so in a lot of ways, our game being so relatable and so inclusive, I think, makes the esport that much more compelling.
And before we were kind of, or you mentioned that there were some challenges along the way. What were some of those challenges faced, and how did you guys kind of overcome those?
You know, what's interesting is that there's a lot of different parties in our ecosystem, right? When you think about basketball, there's only two parties. There's the NBA, which is comprised of the owners, and there's the players. Mm-hmm. In our ecosystem, we have Riot, who owns League of Legends, whereas no one really owns the concept of basketball. No one owns the IP of basketball. The teams are independent entities. Mm-hmm. The pros are independent entities. And then we also consider the viewers to kind of be a fourth party that's invested in our ecosystem. And so when we're making decisions around league format and we're choosing between best of threes versus best of ones, we have to weigh the pros' desire for a more competitive series, which, you know, they want more games to be able to test out competitiveness and limit randomness, with fan desire for something that's simpler and easier to consume, with the team desire where they want, you know, maximum exposure for their brands and their sponsorship. And so it just becomes this really convoluted system of kind of pros and cons to the decision that we make. So, you know, we went from BO1 to BO3. We went back to best of one. We've tried putting more games on the calendar, putting more games into a given day, kind of playing with, you know, do we want to be on two streams at once or one stream? And so it's just a lot of, you know, testing and kind of understanding what the preferences are of our viewership. But at the end of the day, trying to make sure that we're always making the best decision for the entire ecosystem.
Absolutely. And you have some major companies sponsoring League of Legends and esports in general. Can you talk about that and how that has grown?
Sure. So, you know, back in 2012, 2013, you really only saw the endemic brands coming into esports. You saw Logitech and Alienware and Plantronics, you know, like the literal computer accessories and computer makers that you need to play the game. What's exciting is that now brands are starting to see that our demographic and our audience is incredibly compelling, and they're incredibly engaged in the product that we make. You know, when you're thinking about the key demographic for a lot of big kind of brand decisions, you're talking about basically 18 to 30, in a lot of cases, even 18 to 24 for financial services, cars, personal hygiene products. Like, there's so many decisions that you make in that span that if you can find a way to appeal to a very tightly knit group there, that's a very compelling product. When you think about the NBA or the NFL, in most cases, those leagues are looking at 20% of their audiences in the 18 to 24 range. Ours is 80%. Wow. So when you think about a compelling value proposition to all of these companies that want to speak to this new generation of financial decision makers, they're all watching our game. They're all watching our product. And they're watching for hours at a time. They're incredibly engaged in the ecosystem. So, right. You know, whether it's the core of the audience or how much time they're investing, there's just a ton of value to be found in the ecosystem.
And, you know, you have such a loyalty, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all these people playing these games are so loyal to League of Legends and Riot. And so it makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it kind of, in a lot of ways, to me, makes sense to see why, like, a football fan doesn't just become a baseball fan overnight.
Right.
You know, you spend so much time investing in learning a sport, and that learning that you do pays off in a greater understanding and appreciation for what's happening. So, you know, just because Fortnite is the new thing, or Overwatch is the new thing, or Street Fighter is the new thing, doesn't mean that all of these people who've spent years watching League of Legends are just going to make the jump and say, like, oh, well, now I'm a Street Fighter fan because the new game came out. They might play that game for a little bit.
Right.
And that's actually okay with us. Riot's mm-hmm. philosophy on game design has always been that we want League to be the game that you come back to. And so right. it survives these, you know, AAA launches over time. That's why the game has been as big as it has for 10 years. But from an esport perspective, we feel like we have a stronger kind of hold and a stronger engagement with that core audience.
And employees are actually paid to play other games, as we were talking about before we
yeah.
turned on the cameras. Tell me a little bit about that and Riot's company culture.
Yeah, you know, everything that Riot does is trying to be player-focused. You know, mm-hmm. our company motto is literally, we aspire to be the most player-focused game company in the world. And so a lot of that has to do with creating gamer empathy and understanding, you know, the decisions that gamers have to make, the experiences that they're having, not only within League or within League Esports, mm-hmm. but also outside and in other games. So Riot actually does provide a stipend every year for every full-time employee to go out and spend on other games. And so, you know, whether it's subscriptions or, you know, to your MMO of choice or, you know, buying the new game that comes on the market, there's just an investment made in Riders understanding what gaming looks like year over year, because the industry changes so fast that you really have to kind of consciously invest to stay abreast of it. And so, especially for our game design team and a lot of our publishing teams, understanding, you know, the challenges players might be facing with different, you know, game releases or new products out there really helps them position League of Legends better in the market. And for us on the esports side, it just helps us to understand what is the new game out there, what are kind of the new trends in showcasing gaming competitions, and kind of what games out there might be that could kind of challenge for our same core viewership. So, you know, it's about education and really putting ourselves in the player's shoes.
Okay, well, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is Business Rockstars, and this is my amazing guest, Chris Hopper, head of esports North America for Riot Games.
Since you mentioned Key, I'm going to go ahead and give a shout out to DJ Khaled and talk about the keys to success, not just for Snapchat, but for social media. DJ Khaled gets over 3 million views per snap, which is amazing. More than most brands get at all in a matter of a month on any social media network. And the way that DJ Khaled has done this is by being human. People relate to other people. People don't relate to a logo. They don't relate to a pair of sneakers. They relate to other people they see wearing those sneakers or enjoying an experience. So when they see DJ Khaled, who's out in Miami on a pair of jet skis, people say, wow, like, this guy's a normal person. And I think more brands need to be more like DJ Khaled than they need to be an actual brand.
And so when you're saying human, you're defining that as just kind of going about their day-to-day life?
It's essentially product storytelling. It's telling a story about your company, products, or services, and using people to tell a narrative. And the person doesn't need to be Kim Kardashian or DJ Khaled. The person doesn't need to be this big, well-known thought leader, influencer. The person can be your consumer. The greatest competitive advantage that social media gives any business, from my perspective, is the ability to listen. Most brands are focusing on pushing out content. They're not doing a good enough job of listening to what people are saying about them.
What are those things that you had to learn more slowly because you didn't learn it from another company?
You know, I can remember we were on a shoot once at a vacation rental home, and our client taught us how to set up our terms. Remember? And for payment, he's like, never do 50-50 because the client could walk away, they could delay. So he taught us to split it up into three different segments where you get half up front and 30% on a particular deliverable and then 20% at the end so that you're not as liable for being on the hook for 50% of the total cost of the project.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, healthcare, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your healthcare. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year, a month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
You should.
This is Business Rockstars, and we are back with Chris Hopper, head of esports North America at Riot Games. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
So for those who are actually just tuning in, give me a little background on what you do at Riot.
So I lead our esports efforts for North America. So currently, that constitutes all of our League of Legends esports. So operating our league called the League of Legends Championship Series, our studio that we have in West LA, the live events we put on, like our spring finals that's coming up in St. Louis in a couple weeks, and then a lot of our BD and partnership efforts. So how we distribute our content, the brands we choose to partner with, and then ultimately the entire broadcast operation itself. And then presumably with future games, leaning into those esport efforts as well.
That's amazing. And what are some of the key business lessons that you've learned in running a global company?
You know, I think there's been a lot of interesting questions about the strategy of how to implement esports. And one of our early realizations was that you can't just apply the same sort of cut and paste strategy in every market. I think League of Legends took off so exponentially that a lot of people assumed that like, oh, this plan will work everywhere. And when we saw the rise of League esports in North America and Europe and Korea and China, we just kind of assumed like, okay, cool, drop a league in and, you know, it'll just work. And what we realized was that in several other markets, that wasn't necessarily how they wanted to consume their esports. They wanted to see more tournament-based or, you know, their or league wasn't necessarily the biggest game. And so we had to really kind of step back and question what the implementation strategy was, what our end goals were, because in a lot of markets also, we just assumed like everything was going to keep going up and to the right. But the reality was that in several of those markets, things like viewership, you know, sponsor investment were going to be capped just based on the size of those markets. Mm-hmm. And so we had to be kind of conscious about, you know, what we were kind of leading those markets into, because everyone looked at NA and said, oh, you know, I want a new studio. You know, I want to franchise teams. You know, I want to do what they're doing. But the reality is that, you know, there were different steps for different regions, and we needed to kind of be conscious of that and develop custom strategies across. So I think it was really understanding that, you know, painting with too wide a paintbrush can actually be, you know, pretty brand diminutive. And so we needed to be a lot more aware of how we were kind of planning.
Absolutely. And there are some big athletes getting involved in esports like Rick Fox, Michael Jordan.
Literally big.
Yeah, even Magic Johnson, yeah. Literally big. Can you discuss the popularity among professional athletes in esports?
Yeah, you know, Rick is a great example. You know, he got into games and specifically League of Legends because he was playing with his son. And once he did, he found an environment that he felt was very akin to the NBA. It was akin to, I guess, basketball and eventually the NBA. He found an environment where mastery was rewarded, where you had to invest time in developing your skills, where teamwork and communication and discipline were all valued. And so when he bought a team, you know, way before a lot of the other kind of big investors got into the scene, it was because he saw the promise and he saw the similarities between those two sports. And, you know, now that he owns a team and he's able to implement a lot of the learnings that he's had from being in the NBA for so long, you know, he's able to drive a lot of success out of his athletes and he's able to shape them and grow them in the ways that NBA teams have been doing for decades now. So when you look at these investors coming in, you know, they're excited about the potential. I think there's some degree of uncertainty about what the future is, but there's a little bit of hype that comes with that of who knows how big this can be. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some investors who are doing it just because it's the new hot thing. But when you look at guys like Rick Fox, who have really taken the time to get into the scene, who have really invested themselves, you know, both their time and their money in this case with his purchase of a team, it's really because those guys believe in what we're doing and they believe that this is the next big sport, you know, not only in North America, but globally. And so it's incredibly reassuring to us because to see guys that have that experience, have that business acumen and get that validation from them is really great. But also leaning on their knowledge base and leaning on their experience in business is incredibly helpful because we're trying to make decisions right now around things like geolocation, where we want to know whether we should take our teams and put them in different cities around the country. Mm. And we have, you know, 6 or 7 different NBA teams represented in our ownership group. We have, you know, guys from Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NHL. And they're able to weigh in and say, here's why we think we should go regional. Here's why we don't think we should go regional. And so we've managed to assemble a knowledge base within our sport now that's incredibly important to have as kind of, you know, we're developing our strategies for continuing to grow the league.
And before we were talking a little bit about company culture, and Riot is such a huge company of employees across the world, across the globe. What's one of the most surprising things that you would say about the company culture? Because I feel like you guys have a really tight-knit, you know, company and team.
You know, I think one of them is how much play is integrated into the company itself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to think of, oh, yeah, like the game designers, they must play the game and people have to test the game and so they play the game. But I remember in my first couple weeks, you know, we're trying to start an esport league. Things are crazy. We're working around the clock. And the vice president of my department shoots me a note and just says, hey, do you want to play a game? And it's like 3 p.m. Like, I thought it was a trap. And I was like, no, I've got work to do. I'm good.
Yeah.
And then I look and I could see on our internal service that he jumped into a game. And it kind of blew my mind because I was like, here's this guy who's leading this team that's incredibly ambitious, super understaffed. We're hiring for everything. We're super busy. And yet he's taking the time to play the game because it's so important to continue focusing on why we're here.
Right.
We're here for the other players. We're here for the game. And we're here to kind of grow the entire ecosystem there. So, you know, I think that was one of those early just kind of like, this is a very different place than, you know, financial consulting in New York.
Right.
It was kind of a great wake-up call to the beneficial changes that Riot made.
And that's probably why you're still so successful and still hiring so many people and growing so big today.
Yeah, you know, it's been a pretty wild ride. When I joined the company, we were probably around 400 people, and now we're a little over 3,000 across the world.
It's amazing.
You know, in everything from obviously esports and game design to R&D, but, you know, we have a ton of people working in creative efforts. We just announced a partnership with Marvel Comics a couple weeks ago. So, you know, we're really interested in expanding the IP beyond just the game and offering, you know, our fans and viewers and players a way to interact with Riot and, you know, the IP that we've built, Runeterra, the champions themselves, in more than just playing the game. So, you know, we're really excited to see where a lot of those efforts will pay off.
And where do you see esports in the next 5 or 10 years?
Oh, man, if you'd asked me that 5 or 10 years ago, I never would have said we would be where we are now.
Right.
So, you know, there's a degree of ambition, but also kind of practical skepticism that I want to employ here. Mm-hmm. But I'm incredibly optimistic. You know, when we look at our engagement numbers, when we talk to our fans, when we understand who it is that's watching our sport, you know, it's an incredibly valuable cohort of, you know, the population from a sponsorship and investment standpoint. So, you know, when you look at the reason that the NFL or the NBA can be successful, it's because there's so much investment from sponsors and TV and media. And we're just starting to see that turn in the favor of esports. You know, we just announced a MasterCard global sponsorship for League of Legends. We just did a big deal with Alienware, and you know, we're bringing on these sponsors now that, you know, might not have come around before, or they might have invested at a smaller level. But MasterCard said, no, we want to go global. We're making you part of our Priceless Events campaign, you know, and they see the value there. And so for me, that's going to be the driver of the success over the next 5 to 10 years, is how much and how fast traditional media and big sponsors and, you know, big business can figure out the right way to get into esports. Because there is a right way and there is a wrong way. And the wrong way is to just throw money across the whole thing and just, like, hope that something sticks.
Right.
Finding the right league, finding the right partnership, I think, is incredibly important. And that's why we're building out a lot of resources on our side to partner with these brands more effectively.
That's amazing advice. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
This is Business Rockstars, and that was my amazing guest, Chris Hopper, head of Esports North America at Riot Games.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by ASUS.
It's like Pokemon Go meets the NBA. Introducing Big Shot Basketball, a new game for iPhone using augmented reality. Trevor Dirksen from ePlay, the makers of Big Shot Basketball, explains.
So Big Shot is Pokemon Go meets NBA. Instead of finding monsters, you find NBA athletes, and they can be in your neighborhood, they could be your school, your office, they could be down at the basketball stadium. And of course, you've got to find the best players to score the most points. And so every time you collect an NBA player, they now earn you points on the court. Even if you're not playing Big Shot today, LeBron James is, and he's earning you 3 points, defensive rebounds, and big points every time he's playing, hopefully if you're a Los Angeles Lakers fan anyway.
More at BigShotAR.com.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by ASUS.
Hey, I'm Andy.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining us right now is Brandon T. Adams and Greg Roulette. They're the co-hosts of Ambitious Adventures. Guys, good to have you back. Give us a quick recap. What's your show about?
Yeah, so what we really wanted to do was, we both love traveling. We're both young guys, and we wanted to continue to see the world, but we didn't want to just see the taco stand and the barbecue joint, the hamburger place. We wanted to see the people who were really building the communities, and we really believe that it's the young entrepreneurs, the guy risking it to put the brewery at the corner, or the yarn store, or the fashion boutique, or the you know, whatever it is. And so we wanted to turn the cameras on and see how they're building their communities, and that's what Ambitious Adventures is all about.
What do you think has been the hardest part about getting that started? There's so many people out there that... they have a story, they have a message, they have a product or an offer, they have a dream and a vision, but I feel like a lot of people struggle either because of fear or lack of resources, limiting beliefs, self-doubts. What is it, you know, really separated you guys from that to being able to get started?
We made a step forward. I mean, we just did it. Like, we didn't always do everything.
So there's no secret sauce?
There's
just
like,
gotta do it.
Yeah, I mean, we stepped forward and we made mistakes along the way. I mean, there were some things we didn't do right, but we learned, we made pivots, and then... I mean, now we already got a distribution deal and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you start to figure it out as you go, right? Yeah. So, like, if I told you I had all the answers to what we're doing, like, I have no clue,
we're
right?
We're still learning.
We're still learning. But I think it, you know, the first, so I shot the pilot by myself in St. Pete before I had met Brandon, and we got the footage back, and we're like, we bombed this. Like, we did not, conceptually, I think we got it, but we don't have, so I went out and I found a scriptwriter. I found a scriptwriter in Hollywood who writes reality shows, and I'm paying her a lot of money, but it made the Des Moines episode so much better because now we had cohesive scripts and stuff. Yeah. Then it was like on the editing side, all right, so it looks a little too documentary style. Now we need to make it a little more reality style. And so it's figuring out as you go, but you can't figure it out if you never shot the first episode, if you never went out. The other thing that I think is really key is the people around you. So the people around you as an entrepreneur make you more successful than you would be yourself, your team.
Yes.
How important is our crew?
Well, like our crew alone, I mean, the camera guys make it. I mean, we always say, like, we laugh, we're just guys in front of the camera. You're the ones actually making us look good.
Yeah.
And then the people around us that help spread the word. I mean, people believe in our vision. And if you find people that believe in what you're doing, you build a great team, that's how you go far. And that's how we've been able to do. I mean, you and I are just a small part of what we're doing with Ambitious Adventures.
Yeah. And I think that the team is really crucial. The second thing we talked about in the last segment was get to market fast with a product.
Yeah.
So when we went on Kickstarter, we had an actual product to sell. It wasn't just selling air, like back Greg and Brandon's crazy adventures as we go around the world.
You know, give us money.
Yeah, so I mean, we really created hard packages that we can really help these businesses with. And we got, you know, businesses is all across the country to fund the episodes so that they can get media, so they can get video produced, so they could be seen on, you know, national TV and, you know, different distribution outlets. So again, we didn't just create air, like, just fund us and put us on TV. We created a real product and need in the marketplace. And then we went out and we sold it, like, hard selling. I think that's the other part of it. We were on the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week
for the
So the campaign was live on Kickstarter for 25 days, pretty much 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
If we were on the phone with each other, we were making a sale. Making a sale, picking up the phone and making a sale, picking up the phone and making a sale. It was really the hardest work that I'd ever done to make $25 sales, to make $100 sales, and then the $10,000 and $20,000 sales. Yeah. But I think you got to put in the work. I mean, we're no better than anybody else on the other side of the camera.
We just put in the work and grinded on it. I mean, it was a lot of work for doing the crowdfunding. Again, crowdfunding is not easy, but you have to put in the work. We raised $52,000, and now it's going to allow us to raise more money. We've got a distribution deal, and we're filming the episode. So.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I've noticed about you guys is, no matter what the failures, fears, obstacles, objections, rejections, whatever it's going to be, you guys push through it. And one of my favorite quotes, I think from a mutual friend of ours, you guys probably know who he is, Joe Polish. I heard him say, successful people are moving scared, unsuccessful people are frozen stiff. Do you guys think that that's true?
Yeah.
100%.
100%, man.
I think that at the end of the day, you know failures and mistakes are going to come in, and that's what cripples a lot of people from getting started.
I think if you're not scared, you're not growing. Like, I'm always growing out, going out of my comfort zone and growing and getting better because I want to do that crazy thing that people think you're crazy to do.
Yeah. I mean, so one thing, like, with startup culture now, people go out to Silicon Valley and they, like, almost like, I want to raise $2 million so that we can fail. Like, I don't want to fail.
Yeah.
Like, I think failing's terrible. Like, it's a terrible feeling, but it is where the growth comes from. It's, you know, like I said, like in St. Pete, like, it crushed me. I spent a lot of money filming a pilot episode on my own, and I thought, oh, I'm this cool guy. I'm going to go film my own. It was terrible. Like, it was not good. But you learn so much from it, and, you know, again, you got to be moving forward. So many people are just, they're scared. Like, we talked about video in the first thing, and building a personal brand. They're scared to, you know, film themselves on camera. What the worst thing that can happen is you put it on YouTube and no one watches it.
Yeah.
You know, or you get one troll comment.
It's like the worst thing that can happen, if you don't ask, you already got no. And if you do ask, you could just get no and you're in the same place.
And the big thing is, too, like, you don't know where direction's going to go. I mean, like I said, I invented a product called the Arctic Stick. It led me to podcasting, which led me to a TV show, which I would have never seen, but I just kept doing things and learning, and then eventually that overnight success came after years of hard work.
How are you guys using social media, whether it's for crowdfunding, whether it's for your personal branding?
Snapchat.
Whatever the platforms are, you can share that. I mean, we got newborn babies using their parents' phones to get on social media. We got old people trying to figure it out, and everybody in between.
Yeah.
But just because there's a billion people on Facebook and on social media, I feel like a very, very, very small percent actually know how to use it properly. So what do you think are some of the ways you guys...
Talk a little bit about what we did in the Des Moines episode with Snapchat. I think that's really,
yeah,
really
so
huge.
Yeah, so Snapchat is big for me. BT Adams 18 if you haven't added me. But no, it's, I think with Snapchat and everything else, people want to see you authentic, and they want to see your story. I mean, Snapchat is like having your own reality TV show.
Yeah.
We did 150 snaps in 24 hours. But I created this awesome scene. We actually got on the Iowa State Snap Story, 30,000 views in 24 hours for free. But people see who you are, and when they trust you, they believe in you, they eventually buy from you. And honestly, from what we've done, Snapchat has been the best ROI for what I've done. It doesn't cost anything. You're just putting in the work and showing what you're doing and building that trust with your audience.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people, you know, just rely on social. So I'm not that old, but I'm a little older, and I'm very much, you know, a hard paper guy. Like, I still send physical newsletters to people. I send
personal
magazines
emails
to people,
you know,
things like that. And so we were with Jake Paul yesterday. He's on Disney. He's got 3 million plus Instagram followers. He's now on the Disney Channel, and now he's getting people who watch the Disney Channel who don't even know what Snapchat is. They don't know what Instagram is. And so it's a whole nother medium. And so I think with this TV show, we wanted to leverage both what's happening now with Facebook, with Instagram stories, with Snapchat, but also look at traditional distribution, because I still want to hit the 60-year-old CEO or business owner who might fund something or might bring me in to consult for their company. So I think you still need to merge some of the old media with the new media, because there's different audiences in different places. So you can't just solely be on Snapchat, but also you can't solely be on broadcast television. You need to find a way to merge the two. And I think that's the most exciting place for us, is that we're able to take kind of my, you know, direct marketing, DRTV experience with your kind of social media experience, and we get the best of both worlds.
You definitely don't want to just rely on one social media platform. You want to use all of them. And it's contextual, which is what I like that you brought that up. Co-hosts of Ambitious Adventures, Brandon T. Adams and Greg Roulette, are joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. What are some of the values that you guys have consciously chose to adopt into your life that have helped serve you in a professional or personal way? A lot of people have their values conditioned within themselves unconsciously. from their environments, how they were raised, their parents, their friends, social media, the news. But I've noticed that what separates normal people, broke people, depressed people, sad people from happy, healthy, wealthy, successful people who have a big purpose-driven life is that they start to consciously choose their values, growth, contribution, integrity, whatever it may be. So what are some of the values you've chose that are serving you?
I mean, personally, in what we're doing with the TV show, it's all about adding value. Like, if I can add value to you and make your life better, you're gonna grow, you're gonna succeed, and that's for anything in business, whether you're selling something, you're doing TV, you just add value to people, enhance their life, and you'll have success.
Yeah, I'm gonna say for me, it's family. So growing you know, a lot of successful business at the same time, obviously traveling here, every day that I'm in town, I'm home at 5 o'clock. Every single day. So I can be there for dinner. We can go outside in the front yard and play baseball. I got two young sons, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. This time we're filming this. Married my high school sweetheart. So family to me is everything. And why are we working so hard? Why are we building these empires if you can't be there to share it? So I'm writing a book right now called The Ambitious Dad, How to Take Over the World and Still Be Home in Time for Dinner. And so, you know, but it's really about the fact that you can have both. They're not mutually, you know, exclusive. There's so many people out there just hustle, hustle. If you're not working 24 hours a day, then, you know, you're not going to make it. Like, that's to me, that's not how you should live your life. You know, there needs to be some sort of reason why you're doing what you do. For me, it's family.
Well, how do you guys unplug? Because that's the perfect thing to transition into. A lot of times entrepreneurs, they don't know how to turn the brain off. I struggle with that too. How do you unplug?
I mean, we all struggle with it. I know you do too. Like, you just have to make that commitment because you could look at your phone forever. But I mean, when you love what you do, you're enjoying it and it's addiction. Yeah. But for me, like, I just got to go to the gym, work out, or just have that little alone time. Yeah. But that's, you need that to be able to be more successful in business. You need your free time.
I mean, I force it into scheduling. So like I said, 5 to 8. So 5 to 8 is actually in my calendar every day of home, with wife, with kids, with family.
Learned that
from,
the
from
hard
five
way.
To eight. You learned that, well, when we were doing the Kickstarter campaign, he called me at 6 o'clock and he's like, well, bro, why aren't you answering?
Kept calling.
Like, it's dinner time. Like, that is like a religious time, like, for our family. And so, but I think you have to schedule it. Like, if the gym's important to you and you're not going to the gym, it's because it's not in your schedule. So, you know, if you have to put it from 6 to 7, schedule it just like, you didn't miss a business meeting today. We didn't miss this interview today because it was in the calendar. So if the gym's important to you, eating healthy is important to you, your family time's important to you, you have to schedule it as if it was something for business. That's the only way, you know, these serial entrepreneurs can really disconnect.
I love that you said, you know, successful entrepreneurs, you guys included, you have to schedule fun time, you have to schedule family
time.
Most people, I feel like, that are unsuccessful, they're trying to, like we were saying, we have to force ourselves to unplug and have fun. They're trying to force themselves to work. For us, we have to force ourselves to do the opposite.
I know.
What's one of the craziest things or funniest things you guys have experienced so far in your entrepreneurial journey, either together with the show or separately?
What do you think?
Man, so there's a lot of good times. What? I mean,
he's already got one.
I got one. I mean,
yeah, I don't know where you were going.
We were on set. We were filming for Tres Mente Salsa. And I ate like half a pepper.
So we got to set the scene.
Ghost peppers?
Like, legit, we just got into the kitchen. We're supposed to make salsa with these guys. And it's supposed to be like this, you know, 15, 20 minute scene. They haven't even like introduced their business yet.
Pick up the pepper, take a bite. And all of a sudden, like, I was on fire. Like, I started crying. I need a water.
Tearing up, water.
Ruined the whole scene.
Ruined the whole set, the whole shot.
I think it made it.
Yeah, I mean, there's parts of it that just totally made it. But no, it was it was epic. I mean, I think what's interesting, even, you know, with what you guys are doing here, is it, we want to be informative, we want to add value, like Brandon said, but you have to have a little bit of an entertainment value. Mm-hmm. Is that we live in an infotainment world where if you're not entertaining at some level, like if you're watching this right now and you're not like laughing at us, like we're two goofballs, like how do these two goofballs get a TV show?
Then you won't remember us.
Then you're not, you know, it's not memorable. It has to be exciting. You have to tell stories. And so you have to add the entertainment value.
I definitely agree, guys. I wish we had more time. We got to wrap this up. Pleasure having
you guys
on
the
show.
Thank you so much,
man. Hey, we'll be jumping on your show right now.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. How can your startup see growth right away? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. While there is no true secret sauce to seeing success with your business immediately, here are a few ways you can put yourself on the right path. One, plan it all out. An idea without a plan is just an idea. Set short and long-term goals along the way. Two, know your customer. Can you provide great customer service as you grow? Three, hire the right people. Expanding your team with talented additions will help you delegate tasks as you grow. Four, have a little faith. Don't give up. Even with a plan, you'll need to adjust and fix the plan along the way. Identifying and fixing problems right away is the key to scaling quickly. Progress doesn't happen overnight. But if you have a plan, you're well on your way. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics Master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's RANK to 79645.
Hey, my friend's retail store was the victim of IoT password theft.
Yep. Cybercriminals are taking over security cameras, payment systems, and other IoT devices by exploiting vulnerabilities.
What if they target us and our dispersed network?
We're secured with Barracuda. We have advanced firewalls for our sites, enhanced security for our cloud infrastructure, and total email protection.
Such a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is CEO Roundtable, but we have a CEO and a co-founder and managing partner, and we'll make you a CEO at some point. Samer Hamada is with us, the founder and CEO of Zeal, and Lindsay Miles from Willow, which you're all going to want during the holidays or anytime soon. But let's talk about being a CEO or being a leader. What's your corporate culture over at Willow?
You know, we have a lot of consultants in our team, as well as some part-time employees and a couple full-time. So the culture has been really down to business and getting yourself involved into whatever needs to happen.
Right.
Do what needs to happen, whether you're internal or external. So finding third parties and consultants that are willing to do that has been a bit difficult.
We should point out this is a gifting.
Correct.
Business.
Social gifting app.
Social gifting. So, like, if you want to get me something, you would go on Willow and see what I've been looking at on the internet.
Yes, exactly.
Please do this. I swear to God. Samer runs Zeal, which is a on-demand massage place. What's the culture over at your place? You get a lot of employees.
Well, we do. We have nearly 60, and over half are in New York, and the rest are scattered around the country. You know, we have a very simple mission. Like I said earlier on the show, press a button, get a massage. So we work really hard. The customer has a very relaxing, you know, massage and can sort of de-stress, you know, reduce pain, you know, all that sort of thing. So we're very collaborative. We're very fun. We work really hard. We practice the work-life integration that I was talking about, you know, earlier, where we really are on all the time because our customers around the country are getting massage from as early as 8 a.m. to as late as 10:30 p.m. And if you're getting a couple's massage that's, say, 90 minutes per person, that experience ends at 1:30 in the morning. So we're on 24/7, and we're, you know, making sure the customer is really happy.
All right. How do you stay passionate about your business? Because this is such a great idea, is pinpointing what people want.
Yeah.
You know?
Staying involved with our customers and seeing their reaction to when they get something they love. Recently, we interview after they receive, like, birthdays or go through events. And, yeah, seeing the reaction, especially men, we're finding that men getting presents they really want is quite unique in this world.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that.
Used
to be easy, you know, give them a carton of cigarettes or back in the day.
Receiving photos, it's really exciting to see their reaction to getting what they want. And then balance, of course. You know, we're in it all day, every day, on the phone, working, so.
How do you work, how do you do work-life balance?
Mindfulness is a big thing for me. And getting workouts in the week.
Right.
I don't get as many as I would like.
You gotta do your mindfulness in the morning, though, right? Or you do it?
I mean, I do it when I can.
Yeah.
So if I have a break, or if I feel like I'm getting worked up and things are getting stressful, okay, I'm gonna take 10 minutes for myself, turn everything off, and you know.
Breathing works.
Yeah,
are you practicing mindfulness? This is a new trend among CEOs. I haven't tried it.
It's not something you can learn. I mean, you go through the process. Yeah. Can we talk about this later? Because I want to get your thoughts on something else. How do you motivate people at your company, at Zeal?
Well, we hire people who are really passionate about what we do. We really do. We have a very intensive interview process, and we actually test people for skills as well as personality. So we want to make sure that you're very passionate about delivering massage to consumers and about transforming therapists' lives, because we treat our therapists so well and we really do change their lives. We get these incredible emails every day from customers and therapists saying how we've completely changed their lives, and we love that. So we look for people who are into that mission, and once we do, we find we don't have to do too much to motivate them. We just give them the tools and get them to work, and we're moving so fast. Things are happening every hour at our company. It's a really insanely chaotic place in a good way. So people are having a good time. They're motivated.
That's how things have changed, Lindsay, because things move quickly now. And how do you keep track of that? How do you scale your business?
You know, there are a lot of tools that we utilize online. Scaling, I mean, growing users is number one, of course, for a business like yours and mine. Connecting with our users, understanding what they want, is probably number one in scaling.
Right.
And making sure that we're not giving them what we think they need, but what they actually want.
And how much time during the day do you worry that something might go wrong? And that's not a negative question.
Right.
Because there are so many things that we were talking earlier, so many things that can go wrong in this world.
Sure. I mean, kind of all the time and never, if that makes sense.
I like that.
I mean, it's constantly in the background, but yet it never affects my thinking or my mindset.
That's why mindfulness, get rid of those ants.
Right.
Automatic negative thoughts. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is CEO or founder Roundtable. Yeah, you just got to take a deep breath from work, right? Mm-hmm. Every now and then.
Absolutely.
Do you get a chance? Do you set time aside for that?
I do, definitely. Like I said,
really?
When things are getting... Well, you have to.
Okay.
I mean, getting burnout, we see it a lot. I've seen it with a lot of people. And it's definitely on my radar to not go beyond that point where, you know, you kind of lose your mental state and can't pull it back together. So, yeah, I have a 3-year-old. Spending time with him brings everything into perspective.
Yes,
I mean, life
does.
Is very different from a 3-year-old's perspective. So, yeah, I make sure that we get to eat breakfast together. That's a really important time for me in my day.
If you had to pick out one mistake that entrepreneurs and leaders make, what would it be? Lindsay, you go
for
first.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mistake's a bad word. One misstep early.
Yeah. I think a hard one for entrepreneurs is when to cut and move on.
Right.
Pivot is a little bit different. You know, you can kind of feel the market and see and make changes, but to actually say, I didn't get it right this time, and it's time to tell investors you've lost money and tell friends and family a lot of the time that you failed or you lost their money is really difficult. And sometimes we go way too long because that is hard and we're putting off the inevitable. So that's a really difficult position to be in.
So you have to have nerves of steel. Thank you both. You can always get a massage if you get stressed out.
I would love that. Thank you.
Once again, when's my birthday?
Valentine's Day.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect the community of entrepreneurs. This has been CEO Roundtable, Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. We'll see you next time.